Case number 11-10-15-AL, Freshman ED Neighbor, Paul Kane, petitioner, Mr. Patrick Kane.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Molly Eastman. I'm appearing from Cypher Shaw LLP on behalf of Appellant Fresh and Easy Neighborhood Market. I want to start today with the remedy that was ordered in this case. The NLRB ordered two appendices be posted, or two notice postings be posted. And those are found at Appendix A and Appendix B. And I want to start with Appendix B, which is the appendix that the board ordered with relation to the company's no distribution rule. And by way of background, Fresh and Easy in late August of 2009 and early September of 2009 reissued its no distribution rule and clarified its rule in a way that even the board admits was perfectly lawful. And when it issued that rule, it posted the rule at all of its stores. It had team huddles, which are employee meetings, explaining the rule, explaining to employees that they had the right to distribute. And they also published a new handbook. At that time, the ALJ found that the new rule was well disseminated. And he made that finding and ruled that a corporate-wide posting related to the no distribution rule was therefore unnecessary.
You know of any case where we've overruled the board's judgment on an issue like this?
Excuse me, Your Honor, I didn't hear you.
You know of any, I mean, you started out on an issue where we owe, you know, deep deference to the board on its choice of remedies. I mean, we rarely second guess that. And here the board decided that, look, this had been in place since the beginning, including during the issues at stake here, and the board thought that company-wide dissemination was necessary. I just don't see, and we review for abuse of discretion and account for the board's expertise in remedial things. I don't see how you, given that standard of review we have here, even though we might agree with you, if we were on the board, we wouldn't have done this. How do you make the case that we should overrule them?
It is an abuse of discretion. The administrative law judge found that the new rule was well disseminated. And the labor board, in a footnote in its decision, in two sentences, just said, we disagree with the judge.
That's their job.
But they give no reason for disagreeing with it. So it is unreasonable, it is arbitrary and capricious, and there's no remedy needed. The employees have been informed that they have a right to distribute, and there's been a new rule issued. Mm-hmm. Turning to the next.
You didn't bring this case for that purpose, did you? Right? I
mean, it is an important issue for our client.
It is? All right.
Turning to the other notice posting, Appendix A, that's the posting that relates to the board's finding that a store manager, her name is Barbara Shaw, at the East Lake Mead store.
Well, the question about this one is where you raised this issue before the board.
Yes. And
yes, that is the issue. Right. Where did you raise it?
We raised it in the response to the motion for reconsideration. And what happened in this case is the administrative law judge issued only an order with only one appendix. Okay, and that appendix was supposed to be posted at the Las Vegas stores, but it also related to the no distribution rule. And there was no issue to be raised in the exceptions specific to the Eastlake Mead stores because of there wasn't no dichotomy yet between the two different notices. That came up when the board sua sponte decided that they were going to have this Appendix A and this Appendix B, and the Appendix A relating just to the issue at that one store. But the board still found that that should be issued, posted at all Las Vegas area stores. Mm-hmm. And so when the union moved to clarify that order, in our response, we, on the merits of it, we contested the company-wide nature of any posting or anything other than that store posting. And so that's where it was raised.
I understand you raised the company-wide issue, but where did you raise the part of the notice that required that there'd be no coercive questioning or watching? That's the question. I know you challenged
There was an exception to the merits of that. And so what happened is, you know, the board found that Ms. Shaw, who made this allegedly unlawful interrogation and creation of an impression of surveillance to two employees on one day in one store, the order that posting be posted at all Las Vegas stores is punitive. And the board doesn't have the statutory authority to issue a punitive remedy. I mean, it's a cease and desist order, and it needs to be narrowly tailored to the allegedly unlawful conduct. And the appropriate remedy in that case would be a notice posting at the Eastlake Mead, Nevada store. Okay. Mm-hmm. And because there's no showing that the allegedly unlawful conduct associated with Appendix A occurred at any other store, the board's decision requiring Fresh and Easy to post it at other stores is arbitrary and capricious and should not be enforced. Turning to the merits, I want to first start with the board's finding that there was an allegedly unlawful interrogation and creation of an impression of surveillance. Fresh and Easy contests the ALJ's findings as to exactly what was said, just because Fresh and Easy's position is that the counsel for the general counsel's witnesses were inconsistent. But except for the purpose of this argument, just accepting the two statements that he found, and I want to just cover those, he found that the following statements were unlawful. Quote, everyone is writing a statement about the union harassment, and you need to write yours because everyone has already written theirs. The other statement was, write statements because one of the employees was harassed by the union. So he found that Barbara Shaw, the store manager, made those two statements to Catherine Everhart, or actually one form of that statement to Catherine Everhart and Michelle Sumner on one occasion. At the outset, there cannot be any unlawful conduct if that statement did not relate to protected concerted activity. The statement asking to report about harassment is not asking to report about protected activity. Harassment is not protected by the act. Therefore, the board's holding is not supported by substantial evidence. Even assuming that that statement asked to report about protected concerted activity, the allegedly unlawful interrogation could not have occurred because the interrogation was not coercive. The manager made the statement on the sales floor to two employees. One of the employees responded that there was no harassment. The other employee said nothing. She never followed up. She never made another statement again. And both employees admitted that the manager was friendly to them. And under the Bourne test, which is the test that this circuit has repeatedly followed, that is not coercive conduct. And so there cannot be any unlawful interrogation. Turning to the creation of the impression of surveillance, it's clear that Ms. Shaw, looking at those two statements that the ALJ credited, was asking them and made clear to them that other employees had come to her and said that they had been harassed. So she wasn't asking them to, she wasn't suggesting that Ms. Sumner's and Ms. Everhart's activities were under surveillance.
You don't think this is the kind of interpretation of context that the board's expertise comes into play? Whether this was an order, whether it could be reasonably understood by an employee that the supervisor was directing them to write letters about whether or not they had engaged in union activity?
So is this
a substantial evidence?
There is, we don't believe that there was substantial evidence that the activity that was being asked to be reported was protected.
So you want direct evidence as opposed to something that the board could infer?
Well, there is evidence in the record that what the employees had been reporting was harassment.
The board cites authority for the proposition that the union has the right to harass.
The union doesn't have the right to harass. I mean, harassment, repeated solicitations, perhaps, but when it abridges on somebody's rights to privacy or anything like that, what's an employer to do? They've got employees coming to them saying, I've had 3 home visits. How did they get my information?
The employer says, write a letter to the union complaining.
Yes.
But then turns to the other 2 employees who never said anything about the union and tells them to write letters.
Yeah, and
I mean, this is an interpretation of the context, et cetera. I mean, what would our opinion say, that the board could not properly interpret the findings created a coercive atmosphere?
In this case, we don't believe that there's substantial evidence that the interrogation was coercive.
In other words, with our 5 factors that we said you look at, you think the balance weighs in favor of your client?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Which are the strongest factors in your client's favor?
The nature of the activity asked to be reported, so the nature of the information sought, the identity of the questioner, the place and method of interrogation.
You identified, just don't weigh in your client's favor.
Okay.
All right, that's why I said which strongest.
I think the strongest is the nature of the information sought. She was clearly asking a report about harassment, which, again, it's our position that is not protected activity. The place and method of interrogation would be the next, I think, strongest. It was on the sales floor. It was out in the open.
I don't know which way that cuts. And isn't that something the board has to evaluate?
Where the board has come down on it being coercive is typically in a manager's space, like the manager's office. I'd like to turn next to the handbook rule. In this case, there was no enforcement of the no distribution rule. That's, I think, undisputed. And that is important in this case, given the effective repudiation of the rule. The board...
It doesn't make any difference under the board standards, does it? If on its face it limits protected activity, that doesn't make any difference whether it was enforced, doesn't make any difference what employees thought about it, right? It's just illegal. That's what our cases say.
The court's jurisprudence in Adtrance and Aroostook are both say that there needs to actually be a chilling effect.
In Guardsmark, which interprets Martin Luther, it says very clearly that if any policy that, quote, on its face restricts Section 7 rights is per se illegal. You only get into the question of whether it was ever enforced or employees' reasonable expectations if it isn't per se.
Yes, Your Honor, and Guardsmark is the more recent case. The problem, though, is that The standard can't be whatever the board says is facially unlawful is automatically facially unlawful. What the face of the rule here needs to be interpreted in the context. And in Guardsmark, the court does interpret the rule in the context of what was going on, either within the body of the rule or what was happening at the employer's work situs. And here,
how about just the language of the rule?
Yeah, I was just looking for that.
But, well, for example,
you can't do anything but your own time anywhere.
Well, and the rules does allow solicitation and distribution during working time, or during non-working time, sorry. But in the Adtrance case, it was the same type of rule. It said you can't solicit and distribute without authorization. So the board said that that was facially unlawful, but this court, again, looked at whether activity was actually chilled and found that it was not in overruling the board on that.
It says during working time or on government property.
Or on company property.
Thank you. Company property. So to me, that's pretty clear that, you know, company property would include the parking lots on non-working time.
And we submit that that's no different than the rule in Adtrance, which says that you can't solicit or distribute without authorization. They're both under the board's theory.
At least. But this one, I don't see the ambiguity here. So, during working time or on company property for any purpose.
And, Your Honor, I think that the lack of enforcement here is even more important given the curing issue. There was effective repudiation.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
If there are no further questions.
All right. We'll give you a minute.
Thank you.
Good morning or good afternoon. I'm not quite sure what it is at this point. May it please the court. My name is Megan Phillips, counsel for the National Labor Relations Board. The board respectfully requests that this court fully enforce its orders, which found that this company unlawfully maintained a no distribution rule, which prohibited employees from distributing union literature on company at any time on company property, creating the impression of surveillance and interrogating two employees regarding their union activities. Before I hit the issues in chronological order, I would first like to address a couple statements that the opposing counsel made regarding Appendix B and the.
Now, what about the board's footnote? She says, you know, the board just says we disagree with the ALJ that the new rule was well distributed.
Well, under Passavant, that is definitely the company's burden once it's found that they have an unlawful rule to show that they repudiated it. And I believe what the board is saying in that is that they have not shown that it was well disseminated on the record. And it's the company's burden to establish that under Passavant.
Even though the ALJ made that finding.
Yes, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's just a finding. It's a conclusion of law based on the facts. They're not saying, the board's not saying that a factual finding is incorrect. They're saying based on these facts, your conclusion of law is incorrect. As to Appendix A and the 10E issue, it is the board's position that this is definitely that the company waived the issue by not raising it. I will point to the exact pages. I know that this was a bifurcated remedy once it got to the board as to the corporate-wide notice for the handbook rule only and as to the area-wide for the interrogation, surveillance, and handbook rule. I just want to point you to footnote 23 of the ALJ's decision, where he points out that area-wide is noted it's needed because this was directed at the Las Vegas area stores. And then under the order, it is 2A. Within 14 days of service, the region posted, well, he's going to post each of the Las Vegas area stores. This was never limited at the ALJ level to just the store, I believe, 1247, which is the Lake Mead store, I believe. And then there's ample time to raise it to the board. It was never raised to the board. There were only general exceptions as to the overall conclusions, which I believe under this court's decisions in Quayside, Prime Services, and Highlands Hospital would be found to be nothing more than essentially objecting to the board's finding of unlawful activity at all, rather than to a specific part of the remedy. Then the company was given the opportunity to file a motion for reconsideration to the board's decision. They did not do so. They did respond to the union's motion for reconsideration, which was granted, and they only responded to the corporate-wide part of that remedy. And to my reading of what they are saying in the motion for reconsideration, it's almost they do mention that this was, you know, acknowledge at least that the board had ordered that this be posted in the Las Vegas areas, and saying essentially that's fine. It wasn't until we got to this court that that issue was raised. So I would believe that that was properly 10E, and well, that that's properly 10E, and that this court does not have jurisdiction to review that issue. Going to the issue sequentially, as Judge Tatel pointed out, this rule said that you may not distribute literature on company property for any purpose. That is not, that's explicitly restricts. That's what the ALJ found. That's what the board found. This explicitly restricts. And under the board's precedent and this court's precedent, which has been accepted in Lafayette Park and Guardsmark, if the rule explicitly restricts, which on the plain language it says you may not also prohibits distribution of literature during working time or in company property for any purpose, that's unlawful. You don't look at the context or anything else. Plain language. As to the company's argument that it repudiated this, it didn't show that it was timely. This was many months into a union campaign, I believe 10 months into the union campaign, that they repudiated this, that they're saying that they repudiated this rule by issuing a new rule and posting that. Again, it would be the board's position as to footnote one that this was not effectively disseminated, and under Passivan, it would be the company's burden to show that it was effectively disseminated, and the board's conclusion that was that on the record they had not shown that, and therefore, in addition to it not being a timely remedy during a timely repudiation, it was not proper. The company points to the fact that
not properly distributed, right?
Yeah. Well, they didn't.
It wasn't proper repudiation.
Yeah. That's part of it. They didn't proper. I believe the factors under Passivant were that they had informed them properly of their rights to distribute under the Act, and there is evidence. I believe. Let me find the exact pinpoint for you. I'm looking at the record at 296 and 439, where I believe the pronunciation of her name is Yusufan, who was an employee relations director, had indicated that they tried to get it to all the employees, but they didn't necessarily get it to them. So on the record, it wasn't necessarily shown that they effectively distributed it, and that's the board's position on that matter. Going to the question that was asked where the board found a interrogation impression of surveillance, what has happened here is that the store manager, again, as Judge Rogers pointed out, who, you know, in her position, that strongly favors the board under the interrogation analysis under Bourne, because she essentially had control over their future with the company. She comes to them out of nowhere in the back of the store while I Michelle Sumner is working at the kitchen table workstation and asked them to write a statement about the union harassment. This is a very open-ended statement. These employees had never come to her before discussing union activities at all, to the extent that there were union home visits. That's the only thing on the record that the employees could have had in context to evaluate what she was possibly asking about. And there's no showing on the record that there was any unlawful activity. It's perfectly lawful to make these visits. I mean, you know, there may be a point that there are too many visits and it becomes harassment because you've asked them to leave, but there's no showing on the record that there was actual harassment that would be unlawful. Therefore, it is the board's position, and I believe a very reasonable one based on the context, that this was questioning them about their lawful union activities. Regarding the impression of surveillance, it was not made clear to employees that this information was gathered from other employees. This was an open-ended statement. By making the statement about union harassment, asking them to write it, Shaw was essentially asking Sumner and Eberhardt to it's essentially informing them that the company at bare minimum knew that there were these visits, and you know, possibly the company's watching them or having informants to inform them about when these visits are occurring. Again, these employees had never been to her about it. They'd never said the union visited me. So from that very open-ended statement, it's very reasonable that these employees could have felt that their union activities were under surveillance. As to the corporate-wide remedy, I believe that is reasonable under this court's, I mean, not only under the board's broad discretion in under 10C, but it would also be reasonable under this court's precedent in Guardsmark. This was a rule that was disseminated corporate-wide. It was given in the employee handbooks. It's on the internet site. And as the board, this court stated in Guardsmark, only a remedy that can stretch as far as to the violation would be sufficient to cure that. Are there any further questions?
I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Your Honors, I have nothing further unless you have additional questions.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement. Thank you.